It is Wednesday, April the 24th, 2024. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of That's What G Said podcast. Recording this one a little bit early in the week as we are about a week and a half out from the Kentucky Derby, Kentucky Oaks on Friday. So with huge racing coming up next weekend, this week I put together an episode that has NFL and has the NFL draft preview along with this week in wrestling. I'm going to try to not look at a whole bunch of races in the next few days because come Saturday, those Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks PPs are going to be out. We'll be looking at all the races for Friday, for Saturday. I think there's 15 graded stakes races just between those 2 days at those two tracks. So with a huge week coming up next week, let's clear the brain a little bit from a racing perspective and let's talk some NFL draft with Eric. He joins me to preview the NFL draft that's coming up on Thursday. We go through the first 15 or so teams, talk about what they could do, possibilities for them. Then that's when things sort of shift a little bit. So we spend, I think, about 40 minutes talking about the top 10 real in depth, then the next few teams after them, and then Eric talks about a couple teams that he think will really have a good draft overall. We'll get you ready to rock and roll for Thursday. Then Chad Cooper will join for This Week in Wrestling, where we discuss everything going on in NXT. Trick Williams coming in off a big night where he wins the NXT Championship. AEW had a big pay-per-view with Dynasty, and it was a huge night for Swerve. So we'll talk all about that, recapping that. And then we get over to WWE, talk a little bit about SmackDown, about Raw with the draft coming up. A nice episode of This Week in Wrestling on this segment where we really get into everything in NXT, AEW, Raw, and SmackDown. Remember, this episode is presented by full-service realtor Cindy Carava. She can help you out with buying, with selling, with leasing, anything you need in the world of real estate. Contact Cindy Carava at her website, CindyCarava.com. Let's get into our first segment on the show, NFL Draft Preview with Eric. Kick back and enjoy. We'll see what Eric thinks your team may be doing coming up on Thursday night. Time for a special edition of NFL Betting Blitz. That's normally the show where Eric and I go through all of our NFL plays and our best bets, but it's not football season right now. But Eric, the NFL has done a fantastic job of really making it a year-round business, because the offseason sometimes is just as intriguing as when the season starts, when you have free agency, you have the draft, and rule changes and all sorts of things happening. Right now we're in a fun week with the draft coming up. You and I are recording on Wednesday afternoon, and you're actually going to be heading out to the draft live to do some coverage out there.
Correct. I leave early tomorrow morning. I'll be there all 3 days. If you guys see me out there and about, stop by, say hi. I'll share a overpriced adult beverage with you. So
what you and I will do is we'll go through the start of the draft. We'll go through the top 10 picks projected for round one, what you think these teams will do. And then we'll talk about a couple teams that just overall could have a good draft. Maybe they have a lot of picks, or maybe they have some high picks and make some movement, teams that you're looking for a good draft to come through. So for some people who maybe haven't been following along or doing all the prep work and the research leading in, this is, at least on paper right now, where we sit 24 hours out, it seems like we're going to have a lot of the big name skill players drafted early. And there's kind of becoming that quarterback panic where they're going to be a few quarterbacks drafted early. How many do you think are going to go right off the bat?
I think the first three picks will be quarterbacks.
So we'll start with the Bears. You think obviously they're going Caleb. That's been pretty sure for a while.
I mean, it's pretty sure that they've been going Caleb.
So for the Bears, what's nice is that where they sit also, they've got pick one and they've got pick nine. So if you're able to get someone like Caleb, is there a world where we see the Bears, I guess we could talk about their two picks here in the top 10. Is there a world where we could see the Bears coming out of this with Caleb and then maybe trying to trade up to get one of the really good wide receivers?
I didn't really think what's more realistic for the Bears is if Romo Dusa, the wide receiver from Washington, if he's off the board at nine, but he could be there on the board. But if he's off the board at nine, they're actually going to look to trade back, because the difference between the top three edge rushers and the top two defensive linemen, it's very slim. So if you're able to trade back, acquire a couple assets for later in the draft to help your interior defensive line, interior offensive line, which they need, I think that's what they're going to do. So I think that's a team we could kind of move back, that we don't expect to move back, that we think is going to take a wide receiver. I know Keenan Allen is a little bit older. He only has 1 year left. He's over 30. So I think this is just a one-year thing to give Caleb Williams the best opportunity to be successful. So if Rome is there, I think he goes there. But if not, I think the Bears move back and take one of those defensive players, or maybe even a Brian Thomas Jr., the other wide receiver from LSU. So I think that's one of the big pieces. I really feel like this draft is going to break with what the Cardinals and what the Giants do. They're the two teams that kind of hold the key to what these other teams do.
So 2-3, we're looking at Drake May, McDaniels. Do you think there's a for sure which one's going to which right now? And is that what you think as far as 2-3, those next two quarterbacks?
It's always hard when you do these drafts because you have to set aside what you would do and what a GM is going to do.
Yeah.
What I would do was I would draft Drake May. But I think what the Commanders are going to do, bringing in Cliff Kingsbury, whose offense is very like what they did at LSU, I think they're going to draft Jaden Daniels here. I think they're going to go after Jaden Daniels. I think they're going to get him. I think his mobility is going to be a key because it's going to be able to band-aid the holes the Commanders have on the offensive line. Plus, let's face it, Drake May, he needs a little seasoning. He was good 2 years ago, took a step back this year with the coaching changes, with Phil Luongo not being there as the offensive coordinator for the Tar Heels. Took a step back this year. I think Drake May needs a little bit of seasoning and not ready to be thrown in the fire right away. Because of that, I think it's going to be Jaden Daniels that is picked too with the Washington Commanders.
And then that would leave Drake May to the Patriots at 3.
What I think is going to happen here is I think the Minnesota Vikings are actually going to trade up to this pick. We need to remember they brought in Sam Darnold, who can be that bridge gap quarterback. They can start with Donald. Then come week, 8, 9, whenever their bye falls, then you can put Drake May into the situation. I think Drake May just has a lot bigger upside. He's being compared to Justin Herbert. He has the mobility, has the arm strength. I know people are making a thing about playing against the ACC defenses. But when you just kind of look at what he does, footwork, arm strength, ability to read coverage, I think he's going to be the quarterback in 5 years that's going to be the it guy, the guy that we're like, oh, wow, this is the guy you should have took first. Patriots have a lot of holes, offensive line, defensive line. This isn't the same Patriots team that we've been accustomed to. The wide receiver.
They're not just missing a quarterback. They need a lot of help.
I think because of that, the Patriots are going to move down. I think Minnesota's been very vocal about moving up. I think Minnesota moves up. I think they draft Drake May.
Do you think they will do that with either guy? Or do you think they have a preference of quarterback? Like they want, if Daniels is there, they'll take him. But if it's May, then maybe they just trade down because they don't like him as much. Or do you think it matters?
I don't think it matters. I think this is more Minnesota saying, hey,
we need the guy.
The Patriots saying, hey, we have so many holes. They have 2 first round picks. They'll probably be sending both first round picks in order to pull off this trade. Because of that, I think they're going to be able to get Drake May and then the Vikings. And then this is going to set the Patriots up to have 2 first round picks. And then heck, even with the 2 first round picks, this is a team that could potentially move back in to get an offensive line and get someone in the defensive line front. I had another secondary to go along with Christian Gonzalez. The Patriots are going to trade back with the Vikings. The Vikings trade up to get Drake May.
And that's where things get funny, because if we get quarterbacks 1, 2, and 3, then you get a situation where any other teams that might need a quarterback, they could start getting nervous. And that's when they go overspend for a guy like McCarthy, who, how early do you want to draft the 4th or the 5th best quarterback in this draft, right? You don't. And like, if you're someone that's late in the draft, do you want to give up a bunch of stuff to go get the 4th or 5th best quarterback here? Or do you just say, the value doesn't match what the return on our investment could be. We don't want to go give up a couple picks for someone who might just be okay. Right. I mean, after these top 3, is for you, when you're doing your analysis and watching, is it the top 3 quarterbacks and then a big gap to JJ and who's next?
I think there's a huge gap.
Me
too. The thing we need to ask ourselves is, if there wasn't this big push by Harbaugh with his JJ McCarthy narrative, would he be this high on draft board? I personally don't think so. When you just look at the tape, just look at what he can do. He can't throw to the left side of the field. His completion percentage was in the bottom, low 50s, throwing to the left side of the field. He can only throw to the right side of the field. Did he do great in college? Did he win a ton? Did he win a ton in high school? Yes. But this is the NFL level. And if you're a GM and you trade up and a quarterback doesn't do well, you're done. And you may not even get another job. I feel with him, there's a lot of little red flags out there that I don't think teams are going to trade up. And my final mock draft, which I did, which is up on my website, I actually did have a team draft up to take him in a couple picks. We'll get to a little bit later. But I don't think you can do that. And I think if you do that, I think that you're going to set your franchise up. I know you want to get the quarterback on the rookie scale, but the Browns went out there. The Browns showed us, hey, you build in the trenches and you have a serviceable quarterback with a good run game, you can make the playoffs.
So you just got to be ready to build. That's how you have to be a good organization, right? You come in with a plan and say, okay, we're going to try to get a quarterback here, or hey, we need a wide receiver, or we need, two spots on the defense. But if those are taken, you have to be ready to call an audible and to shift a little bit to what your needs are or how you're going to build your team. Hey, you know what? That doesn't work. We can't just try to put a square peg in a round hole. We have to go get the best player available. And I can't be an old school coach who only does it this way, right? I have to be a little bit able to be malleable. And okay, these are the players. Let's put our players in the best spot to succeed. Sometimes you can do one, but you have to be capable of doing both as a GM or as a head coach, right?
You have to be able to adjust on the fly. Last year, I really feel what happened with a lot of these teams is no one saw that trade up for Willie Anderson happening. Nobody saw it happening. And then teams started to panic. And because of that, we saw some trades and some stuff happen. I really feel if Gonzalez was still on the board when the Lions picked, Lions would have took him. Or Witherspoon, whoever was the guy that Seattle drafted. I may be wrong, but one of the cornerback that Seattle drafted, I think the Lions were going to draft him if he was still on the board. But that move to go up for the Texans and have the top two picks and draft Willie Anderson threw the draft completely on heels last year. And it wouldn't surprise me if something like that happens this year.
So we're up to, in the 4 or 5 spot now. This is where things will start to change. So
these three picks here, because when you kind of look at everyone's kind of projections and everything, they have the Titans taking Joel out, the offensive lineman from the Irish, and their offensive line is putrid. They need to protect Will Levis. So I think they're pretty set staying there. But we have the Cardinals. The Cardinals, they lost Hollywood Brown. They really don't have a true number one wide receiver. What are they going to do? Are they going to draft Marvin Harrison? Or is this going to be a situation where a team like whoever, like the Broncos maybe, or if the Patriots don't make the trade, the Vikings move up to draft the quarterback. And they move down, and then they move back into the back end of the top 10 to draft Romo Dusa,
one of the wide receivers.
One of the wide receivers.
Neighbors,
this is a team like Cardinals. Cardinals are an interesting team. Cardinals have the potential to have a very good draft here. They're kind of the position where they're like, hey, you know what? We can take, if we think Marvin Harrison is going to be that, we can take him.
And he may be the best player off the board, right? Like he's been for years. He's been since they said that. I mean, for years, we've been hearing about him as the best wide receiver prospect since Calvin Johnson. And then the teams in front of him, they just need quarterbacks. He very easily could be the best player in this draft. And he could be someone right away that could jump in and help you.
Jump in, be the clear number one. You give Kyler Murray the weapon. You also have McBride there. Very interesting. Or you could look to move. You got Paris Johnson last year. Cardinals are a really interesting team. And they're doing a lot of good stuff with kind of being under the radar.
Under the radar, yeah.
No one's really talking about them because they did get some picks from the Texans with that trade last year. Also, you look at it, does a team trade off? I really, again, I'm pretty adamant here with my thinking that you should not be taking JJ McCarthy with a top five pick.
Completely
also,
agree.
When the list came out about who's going to be attending, you think if you're going to be a top five pick, you're going to be attending, especially with it being in Detroit, Michigan, you playing at Ann Arbor, he's not going to be there. So that kind of tells to me that he kind of knows, and these guys, they have an idea where they're going to go, that he knows he's not going to be taken within one of these top picks. Maybe it's just me overreading the room, but I really feel that the Cards have their choice here. You can trade back. You can take Harrison. Look, I think you got to take Harrison here. I mean, I think it's a pretty no-brainer in my eyes. You got to take Marvin Harrison here. And then we get to the Chargers.
Things are going to be new for them. Right?
Yeah.
Because it's brand new.
It's kind of crazy to me. There's so, like, Harbaugh's been on this JJ McCarthy thing. There's this run crazy rumor that he's going to look to trade Herbert and bring in JJ McCarthy, which I think would be idiotic.
Absurd.
This is another, but they've been saying, hey, you know what? We need offensive linemen. We're going to run the ball. But when you look at their offensive line, when it stayed healthy, and you can use that term,
it was okay.
When it stayed healthy, it was really good. So I just don't think that they're going to take an offensive lineman.
Wide receiver.
I think they're in a position to move back. It wouldn't surprise me, if a team moved up. Like
a team that wanted one of those receivers or a QB.
Some people think Neighbors is just as good as Harrison, if not better. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me if a team moved up. But at the end of the day, I think Harbaugh deep down knows, hey, you have to be able to throw the ball here. We lost not just Keenan Allen, but we lost Michael Williams as well. We lost our top two wide receivers. We drafted Quentin Johnson early. We reached for him last year.
He was not good.
Doesn't use his hands. We need to get a clear number one. I think they need to take. I think for them, taking Neighbors is a clear cut thing. And sometimes you have to do that when you do these mock drafts. A case in point, a team like the Saints. You look at the Saints, they literally have no offensive tackles on their roster right now. Literally, they have zero. So I really feel like that's kind of a tell what they're going to do. And when you look at this Chargers roster, them having no wide receivers is a tell that they're going to be drafting a wide receiver. I think it's a no-brainer. I think they take Neighbors.
We move to the Giants. So coming off a really bad year, is this one of these teams that I've heard, did they try to reach for a quarterback, or do they do something where they move up a spot or two to grab a McCarthy, which that to me would be just like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, where it's like, you paid a guy, Jones, who had a good year, but then you, unfortunately, what happens, you have to overpay that guy who you never even know if he's going to get back to the success he had the really good year a few years ago. So you already had to pay him a bunch. He got hurt last year. And now if you go draft a quarterback and you're drafting, you know, the fourth quarterback in this draft, which is going to be McCarthy or someone below him, Bo Nix, someone like that, like, I don't know if that's what you want to do. If I were them, I'm trying to just take some of the best available, but I've been hearing weird rumors. What do you think they're going to do?
They can do three things here. They can draft JJ McCarthy, which I do not think they're going to do because they just signed Daniel Jones to that big contract. So I think they're kind of locked into Daniel Jones right now and need to give him the best chance to be successful. So with that being said, you look at the Giants. They need offensive line help. They literally just spent two picks in a row on an offensive line. I don't think a GM is going to, you know what I mean? A GM is going to pick three tackles in top 10 picks.
No.
Oh, sorry. 3 years in a row. I just don't see that happening. So then that leaves the wide receiver position. Last night on my show, we did a mock draft, and my guest Sterling from Silver Star Sports, him and I just went back and forth. I had the even odd ones. He had the even ones. It was just like, what were things going to happen? He had them draft Rome here from Washington. What I think is a real possibility, because when you look at the Giants, they need wide receiver, offensive line, defensive line, cornerbacks, linebackers. Hell, you probably need a tight end because Waller can't stay on it. It wouldn't surprise me if we see a team like the Broncos with that new ownership panic and the Broncos trade up here to draft a quarterback because they literally have Jared Stidham right now. So I think the Broncos are going to be a team that we look to trade up here, and they're going to take J.J. McCarthy.
So it sounds like you think the certain players will probably go top six, but we're not exactly sure which teams as much, right? Like, it seems like you think three quarterbacks, three receivers probably?
Well, it kind of depends. Like if the Giants stay, I think they take a wide receiver.
They take a receiver. But yeah. So like it seems like it seems like it's more safe that those players probably go in those spots. And we have teams, like you're saying, that maybe need another receiver move up after Harrison's gone. And then somebody goes, uh-oh, let's make sure we get one of these next guys. Because I'm thinking a lot of people probably have them ranked in the tiers, kind of like what we're talking about, right? Like the three quarterbacks, maybe, hey, I want to get one of those three. If it's not one of them, then maybe let's wait. And then you might get one or two teams that get nervous and go, uh-oh, let's go get McCarthy. Same thing with the wide receivers. It feels like you got, is it those three that are kind of in a tier above everybody else?
Yeah, those three are above.
Like Harrison, Neighbors, and Adonze?
Yeah, and then right below that, you have the kid Mitchell from the Texas. He's got some off-the-field stuff that's kind of worrying some people. You got Thomas Jr. from LSU. He's right there, too. And you got Ladd Mikulski from Georgia. Those guys are probably going to be the ones that I think are going to be drafted in the first round. But there is definitely a little bit of a drop-off. The one that I'm kind of interested in at the NFL level is I'm kind of interested in Brian Thomas Jr. He was the running rate to Neighbors. I think in the right system, I think he could kind of thrive. A team off the beaten path I think he's kind of live for is the Jacksonville Jaguars. Because can a playoff team really be a playoff team if Christian Kirk's your number one wide receiver option? I don't think it can. I think they need to add a little bit to the wide receiver room. That'd be something I'd look to do. In terms of this pick here, I think the Giants take a wide receiver, or I think they trade out, get a couple more assets because of how much they need, and the Broncos trade up to take McCarthy.
And we pointed out a little earlier, Titans feel like they're going to get an offensive lineman here.
Mm-hmm. It's just how it breaks down. I mean, a lot of people have Joe All on top. I have Joe All on top. I think they're going to go with him. Their offensive line was putrid last year. You don't have Derrick Henry. You need to be able to protect Levis.
Young quarterback now. They like Levis, it seems like, right? So you got to give him an opportunity, build in front of him, give the guy some time to throw. For Atlanta, it's been what I've been reading and hearing is if they stay here, make the pick, probably defense, probably like a cornerback.
Well, no, I mean, I think if they stay here, I think they're going to go Dallas Turner, the edge rusher from Atlanta.
Sure.
Pair him. They have had a little hard time getting to the quarterback here. But this is another pick. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if a team like the Saints traded up to the eighth pick because Atlanta's pretty well set. If Atlanta can trade back, pick up a couple more draft picks, and kind of build and not try to get starters, but try to get those second-tier guys, the backups later in the draft, because they're set everywhere else.
Yeah, their roster was pretty good last year, right? They have offensively, they have top tier talent on the offensive side. Their offensive line has been really solid. They can run the ball well. And then defensively, they put a lot into their defense last year too, right?
Yeah.
Like as far as the big starters and some kind of splashy defensive moves. So you're right. For them, instead of necessarily going out and getting one of these top tier, heck, it'd be nice if you could build up a little more depth, right? Get a couple picks here or a pick here, a pick next year, just sort of put your franchise in a better spot to succeed overall than going and making another flashy pick where maybe this one pick doesn't hit, but then all of a sudden you turn this one pick into two or three and you just got a better opportunity of those being a little bit more useful for your team right now.
Yeah. So like they could trade here. I really feel they do trade back because when you look at the, defensive line and the edge rushers, there's not a big difference. The top two defensive linemen, Brian Murphy from Texas, Newton from Illinois. When you look at the top pass rushers, you got Dallas Turner from Alabama, you got Latsu from UCLA, and you got Greece from Florida State. There's really not that big of a difference. It's kind of like, which one do you want to get? Who's ever on the top of your board? with them kind of having the pick, I kind of feel that they could easily move back to 14. Oh, no, sorry. Move back, like, maybe the Raiders trade up. Maybe the Giants trade up. A team like that. They're not going to trade with the Saints, obviously, because the Saints are within the same division. And I think the Saints are maybe the Saints trade up to 9 with the Bears just because they need that offensive lineman. And it's kind of starting to come out that if Pace could trade back, Pace kind of said he's open for business with the 9 pick without saying he's open for business with the 9 pick. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Bears are a team that looks to trade back. And then they trade back with the Saints, and the Saints come up and get their whoever they have as their second best offensive lineman. Jets are kind of getting a lot of steam trying to draft in Brock Bowers, which to me, it doesn't make sense. I know they improved their offensive line, signing like some older tackles. But look, you have a 40-year-old quarterback coming off a major injury. Interesting, you could take the kid from Penn State, Veshua, but he can only really play a tackle position. You look at the kid from Washington, whose name is Fatua. He can play guard. He can play both tackle positions. A little bit more versatile. Maybe they go there. Or there's Fanuga from Oregon State, who's in the same position. I think they're going to look to get Fanuga. Actually, it's kind of, you can get him 8-1 still on FanDuel to be the 10th pick. He's my second offensive lineman on my board. He's a little bit more versatile. And sometimes you just need to say stuff out loud. You have a 40-year-old quarterback coming off a major injury. You need to protect him. You know what I mean? Like sometimes when you just say it that bluntly, it kind of makes sense to me. So I think the Jets, would go here. So,
and then the two teams behind them, just from they're kind of wild cards in this draft, right? The Vikings and the Broncos, because you've mentioned them a few times as teams that would not be a shock to see them trade up for a quarterback, for a wide receiver, for a skill position guy. They don't have very much talent at the skill positions, right?
And also we need to remember there's certain teams that just need talent and that are at the beginning of the draft, and certain teams that feel they need a quarterback. So those are the teams we could see trade up. Maybe even the Raiders we see trade up because they do.
They're right behind them too, right? Yeah, those three. Yeah.
And Vikings, great. And you mentioned the quarterbacks. I really feel when you look at McCarthy, can't throw to the left side of the field. When you look at Bo Nix, he cannot sense pressure from the weak side for the life of him. And he can't really step into the pocket. That's something to be at the NFL level, you need to do. Now, I absolutely love Penix, and the reason I like Penix a lot is it's hard to teach NFL quarterbacks to step up and throw with confidence down the field. Penix can do that all day. But the worry with Penix is he's had like 3 major knee issues, and we've seen quarterbacks drop because of those knee issues. So that's kind of the worry with Penix. Because of that, that's why I think those two may drop out of the first, and it wouldn't surprise me if no one trades up. We see JJ fall a little bit more. I really think that with the way that the team kind of broke right here, like hypothetically with how we've laid it out, the team we need to kind of watch is the Cincinnati Bengals. Cincinnati Bengals, if Brock Bowers is still on the board come pick 11, I guarantee that the Bengals are going to be calling to look to move up there to get that weapon. So now you have Bowers, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, because he's going to be leaving soon. So your window is closing with them, and you get Brock Bowers. I mean, that's a team I want to be invested in. You know what I mean? Like, this is kind of like if Bowers is still on the board, we could kind of see a team move up a little bit. You know, you got Byron Murphy still on the board. He's an elite run stuffer. We could see people move up for him. And we haven't even got to the cornerbacks. There's been no cornerbacks off of it. So, I mean, there's a certain amount of teams that, you know, could do some things. It wouldn't surprise me. The Raiders, what do the Raiders do? The Raiders need a quarterback. They need a ton of help in the defensive position. Now, granted, they could draft Nix or Penix in the position they're at. I think they're going to go cornerback here.
So that's the top. Like the Colts. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. No, I was going to say, like, that's the game.
Like, you look at a team like the Colts. Ursay just came out and said he wants Marvin Harrison. I mean, like,
they move up,
and
right?
The Colts, do they move up? Because when you look at it, the Colts
young quarterback
need someone, the young quarterback, they have Michael Pittman. Do they look to do something there? They definitely, if I'm the Colts, though, I mean, how much money did you and I make during when we did the NFL show, like saying, okay, we're attacking the Colts secondary again. You know what I mean? Like, I really feel
you gotta
like
get better there.
We need to address the secondary. What are your Rams going to do? Like with the position we're in now, and they're being like the pass rushers, Latua, Murphy, Newton, all those defensive fronts, you're in the post Donald era. Now look, I know they really don't, I know they've had the history of not drafting in the first round. Do you trade up to try to get Aaron Donald's replacement right now with those guys on those board? You know, I just, there's a lot of stuff going on. The Steelers just, the rumor is the Steelers are going to give Fields his fifth year extension. So, I mean, they're kind of saying Wilson's going to be the bridge gap quarterback. We're going to let Fields sit. Fields is going to be the guy moving forward after next year. Do the Steelers move up to take Troy Fontu, the offensive lineman from Washington, who's really versatile? I think there's a couple guys I feel are going to be steals. One of them is this kid, Jackson Powers Johnson. He's from Oregon. He can play both interior guard positions and he can play the center position. I think he's either going to go to Dallas, who's very bad at the offensive line. You look at their offensive line now, it's just absolutely putrid. But it also wouldn't surprise me if my Lions traded up from. We need to remember a couple years ago, and I'm spacing on the guy's name, their left tackle. He didn't allow a sack all year. Played at Cincinnati. The Eagles traded up to get him at the beginning of the second round because they knew that Kelsey was going to be retiring soon. Lions just lost Jonah Jackson, their left guard. They need to replace him. Frank Ragnow, their all-world center. He's getting up there in age. He's been banged up a lot. Do they look to trade up to take Jackson Powers Johnson to kind of like play the left guard and be the heir apparent to Frank Ragnow? And then we have the Cardinals who have the Texans pick. Do the Cardinals, who have all these picks, do they say, okay, you know what? We're sitting at pick 27. We're going to look to trade up to try to get back into the mix of something. What do the Bills do? Bills are in an interesting position. Do the Bills look to trade up? Because they obviously need Stephon Diggs replacement. I think for them, Mitchell, the kid from Texas, elite, clear-cut number one, do they look to get him? But he's got some off-the-field stuff. Do you really want another headache with a Stephon Diggs-type player in the room? There's a Wilson, the linebacker from NC State. Do they look to make him and then try to get Mitchell at the beginning of the second round? Or it could be a team like the Seahawks. Seahawks had a couple of visits with Penix. Hypothetically, let's say a team like the Cardinals sitting at 27 and Penix is still on the board. Do we see the Seahawks move up to be in the Cards position? The Panthers, I know, traded for Deontay Johnson. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Panthers trade up and look to add like a Troy Franklin, look to add someone like a Mitchell or a Brian Thomas Jr., the kid from LSU. I think the Panthers could trade up. And there's one big chip that I really think is going to fall over this weekend. I think Brendan Ayuk gets traded. So when you look at the big scheme of the NFL, if you put Ayuk on the team, would he be the number one wide receiver? I have about 5 to 7 teams where if you put Ayuk on the team, I think he'd be the number one wide receiver.
I agree.
Do we see the 49ers make a trade for Ayuk? I don't think you can get a first-round pick for Ayuk, but you're going to be able to get some third-round capital. But
one of these teams that might need a wide receiver may not draft the wide receiver if they get Ayuk, right? Like one of those teams like, towards the top.
Let's say the Bills. Hypothetically, I think the Bills are a perfect team. Bills are sitting at 28. If Mitchell, Troy Franklin, Ladd, McCaskey from Georgia are still on the board, and the Bills don't take either any of them, I think that's kind of a tell point that maybe there's a work for Ayuk on the board. Maybe they're working to get Ayuk there. That's just, you know, it's just going to kind of be interesting to see. And then if they don't do that, and then the 49ers draft a wide receiver, that should just be red flags right there. Okay, you know what? Ayuk's going to get traded. Cowboys, what do the Cowboys do? Dak's contract is up. Like, could we see Jerry Jones?
Damn, okay, you know trade what? Up.
I'm going to draft Bo Nix. I'm going to take Penix. You know,
one of the guys that's left.
Because when you look, I mean, they need a running back, wide receiver, quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker. they need so much, and it's just absurd. Another team, Bucks. Bucks are a team. Bucks have a lot of holes. They have Godwin. They just signed Evans. With it being such a wide receiver team, do they move Godwin in the draft? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of little pieces that are going to be interesting to see, like, how it plays out. There's one thing I always look at is top 30 visits. Teams have to be vocal with the teams, with the players that come for quote-unquote top 30 visits. Your boy Rice from USC, Jerry's kid, he had 12 top 30 visits. Is Rice a kid that could sneak into the first round, like the 49ers?
He's got pedigree. People probably trust with the family too, right? You know, a guy who you feel like should just have a good head on his shoulders. Who, if you and I are talking on Monday, give me three teams that you are going to tell me they had a good draft. They got a lot, or they got their guy, or I think they're going to be improved this year because of the draft. Give me three teams that are on your radar, whether it's a lot of picks, top picks, you just feel like they're going to hit their needs. Give them to me.
I think the Bears. I think the Bears are going to be able to say something, because I think they're either going to get Rome from Washington, or I think they're going to trade back and then trade back, acquire some more picks. I think that the Bengals, I think the Bengals are either going to get a defensive lineman to replace DJ Reader, or they're going to trade up for Brock Bowers. So I think they're going to make some headway. And then I think the Commanders. I kind of feel like the Commanders, because you know what? You may not agree with what they're going to do, but they have the second pick. So they're going to have their pick of their quarterback. So you can't really fault somebody for having the pick of their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then, And then we could see them, you know, maybe making a move, maybe coming back into it. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if a team like Washington, Washington has a 23rd pick. Washington needs to require more assets. You know what I mean? Do they trade, or do they, like, hypothetically, with how my board is, the Patriots trade back, get two picks. They get the 11th pick from the Vikings, and they get the 23rd pick from the Vikings. Then the Commanders trade back up, because the Commanders need offensive line help. The Commanders trade back up into the first round, and they get the kid Graham Burton from Duke, who can play, who's the same thing as Powers Johnson, that can play many positions.
And now you got your quarterback and your offensive lineman to protect him right there in the first round, and you feel like, hey, whether or not those guys hit, that's what this team needs. They need to go get their quarterback and know who it is. They need to go get some protection, and boom, if you can check off those boxes right away, you feel really good moving into the later rounds.
Yeah, and then there's little teams, like a team like the Eagles, with how many cornerbacks have been falling. I think they're in a position, and when you look at their history of drafting, they're going to draft the right guy. Everyone knows they're going to take a defensive guy here, probably a cornerback. They take Tupper Dijon, the guy from Iowa who had a major knee injury, whose pro day was off the chart. Quinion Mitchell from Toledo, who's a top DB, but he went from Toledo, so people are kind of questioning the top of the, his talent, who he's gone against. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. An interesting name to watch is Chop Robinson, pass rusher from Penn State. Did someone trade up for him? But to answer your question, Commanders, I think the Eagles, and I think the Bears, I think they're going to be the teams on Monday where we sit back and say, you know what, they really did a good job this draft.
Eric, man, incredible information as always. You are prepped. You are ready. You've done the homework. You've got some wagers locked in. Now you go have a nice time at the draft this weekend. Have fun. Safe travels over there. It'll be in a familiar place for you too, right over there in Detroit, right?
Yeah, right downtown Detroit. They said there's going to be 300,000 people in Detroit. So that's going to be a little interesting. Me and my claustrophobicness will be doing great there.
Yeah.
Should be a good time. Like I said, if you guys see me there, come up. We can shoot the shit a little bit. You know, I got to be filming some content stuff. So come say hi and, we'll have a beer.
Thanks so much, buddy. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. You and I will be talking some more basketball next week when you come back. But we'll have some shows over the next few days for our NBA shows. We're just going to figure out exactly how we're going to do it. A couple of them might be just me. A couple of them might be you. We might have some fill-ins, but we will have our NBA shows with the promo code NFL Betting Blitz. If you want to go to Parlay Play, if you're looking for a great place to play props, parlayplay.io. Use our promo code NFL Betting Blitz. Thanks so much, Eric. Good luck to you this weekend. Enjoy the draft. Thanks so much, everyone, for hanging out with us here. And we'll be back with much more soon on That's What She Said. Big thank you to Eric for helping getting us ready for the NFL draft. Now, those of you playing the races this week, you always have to go to expressbet.com and take a look at the tournament schedule and the contest that they have approaching. So if you're listening to this, I recorded on Wednesday. On Thursday, they have feeders at Keeneland, Thursday and Friday. They're $40 contest. Only cost you $40. And what they'll do is they'll give you a seat into the May 3rd Kentucky Derby Challenge feeder. So it's a three-step process. For $40, you win your way into a slightly bigger contest, and that one will get you the seat in the Kentucky Derby Challenge, which is a big contest that we're all shooting for. That's on Saturday, May 4th. That's on Derby Day. This is a huge contest. It's a $3,000 entry, and you can win 20, 25 NHC seats, BCBC seats, Pegasus World Cup Betting Challenge seats, just tons of massive future prizes to big tournaments, cash prizes. It is a huge tournament. So that's on Saturday, May the 4th. And that's one of these big tournaments that we're really trying to get qualified for. At Santa Anita, they have feeders for the Santa Anita Challenge. That's this weekend. So that's on Saturday, April the 27th. That's only a $500 buy-in contest. And there are two entries into the NHC and also cash prizes in that one. So you'll want to try to get qualified maybe on Friday for just $40, or you can pay the $500 for the tournament on Saturday, the Santa Anita Challenge. Just so many opportunities each and every week. So those are the two big ones that we're circling right now. Can we get qualified for the Kentucky Derby Challenge? There's a few chances at Keeneland Thursday and Friday, their final 2 days of racing at the meet. And then at Santa Anita, they have feeder on Friday to try to get us into Saturday's Santa Anita Challenge. Good luck, everyone, and make sure you go to expressbet.com, take a look at the tournament schedule each and every week. I've been trying to get qualified in a lot of these $40 feeder games, so hopefully we can win our way into a bigger one very soon. Let's move along and talk some wrestling with Chad Cooper. NXT is coming off of night one of spring breakin'. Whoop that trick. Trick Williams gets the big win. Then AEW, they had a really good pay-per-view Dynasty over the weekend. One of the best matches you will ever see with Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay there. We move over to SmackDown with the draft coming up on Friday. And then on Monday at Raw, Chad Cooper joins me to discuss everything going on in the world of wrestling. It's This Week in Wrestling with Chad Cooper.
Here it is, folks. Fight of the night. And trying to claim that belt once and for all. It's
This Week's Wrestling Recap. All right, calm down.
And here he is, your hometown hero. Your reigning champ, the one and only Chad Cooper!
So you know what time of the week it is, folks. It is time to whoop that trick. Whoop that whoop that trick. I like it. Whoop that trick. Gina Bacola here with Chad Cooper for This Week in Wrestling on That's What She Said podcast. Coop-a-loop, it's a big week for Trick Williams. The Trick Daddy gets the job done and wins the NXT Championship. How you doing this week, my friend?
Man, I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. Not as well as Trick Williams. Did you see how over that guy is? Holy cow. And you know what was even better? I like the presentation of it. Throughout the night, we got to see a lot of big roster stars.
Fantastic.
On NXT. You know, Damian Priest was there. And this led up to the main event, which was a really good match. Dragunov, very emotional at the end. But that crowd was so excited to see him win that world championship. And let's remember, he's a guy that hasn't been in professional wrestling for very long. So he's come a very long way in a very short period of time. And he is one of the hottest names, not on NXT. He is the hottest name on NXT. We got to remember several weeks ago, month maybe, he and Carmelo went to SmackDown in Florida, was in Miami, and that place erupted there.
They
so this guy is 100% over on Trick Williams, and I've bought into.
You know who else Trick Williams is over with? Milo, who loves to chant, whoop that trick, whoop that trick. And then my his mom, Stephanie, will be looking at me like, oh, my God, don't have him say
what are we
that.
Doing?
He's going, whoop that trick. Uh-huh. And I'm doing the Booker. I'm laying it in. As you pointed out, they did a very good job of making it feel like a big match. And I don't think many people were expecting Trick to lose this match, right? It felt like it was going to be his crowning moment, his coronation. He's had a couple opportunities previously that have not gone through, but they were storyline reasons why. And now he's finally able to seal the deal. So throughout the night, we saw former NXT champions, NXT superstars, all showing up, either talking to Trick or being interviewed by different reporters. We saw him sitting in the stands. I think Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne. We saw the Creed brothers.
Creed brothers on the front row, yeah, with Ivy
Gargano, talked with Trick. Who else? There was at least a couple others throughout the night, and we'll get on through the show. And what is really cool about Trick, and just show I think it shows you the differences between a place like WWE and AEW, and sometimes it can be a strength, sometimes it can be a weakness, in that AEW would probably never sign a guy like a Trick Williams. When he got signed, he wasn't some fantastic five-star in-ring worker before he showed up in NXT. He was a guy that had the it factor, that you train to become a wrestler. And sometimes that works, Chad, and other times it doesn't. How many guys and gals through the years have you seen, you know, that have come in from football, or, you know, JR would expect that they were going to be some awesome wrestler, and then they wouldn't. And then the flip side, you know, so many that Tiffany Stratton weren't wrestlers, weren't someone on the indies. They come to NXT. They have athleticism. They have it. And once they can put it all together in the ring, wow, they like sky's the limit. And so Trick Williams still right now, you know, you like if you go through each of his matches individually, he's always over, crowd's always over. Sometimes they're a little sloppy. Sometimes there are missed spots. This was his best match by far. It was awesome. The crowd was into it. And what you just see is the improvement. So, man, where could this guy be in another 6 months or a year? With how quickly he's picking everything up, he's going to be a really fun guy to lead the way and be the face of NXT for the rest of this year, at least, I think.
Yeah. I mean, so looking at his timeline, he signs a developmental contract with the WWE in February of 2021. Okay. And later that year, in September, he debuts with Carmelo.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, and it's quickly, middle of last year, Williams and Hayes turns face. Was it last week that him and Carmelo had the steel cage match? And it was even better that Carmelo didn't get involved in this match, because it's not about he and Carmelo anymore. That chapter has ended. Now maybe they could pick it up one day on the main roster, you know, with a storyline, but it was really, really good to see him do this by himself with no outside interference. And man, the near falls at the very end were just really, really good, because there were a couple times where I thought, okay, Trick's not going to win this. Okay, maybe Trick is going to win this. And I thought everyone involved did a really good job. The crowd, the announcers, it was just a really well done booked match. And properly done. And I think you and I probably have seen the last of Dragunov on Tuesday nights.
Dragunov puts Trick over at the end, gives him the big aggressive hug. He looks him right there. I'm going to give you one of those next time I see you, the Dragunov hug. Just put my face right next to your face and just squeeze you around the neck.
Yeah, just before you do that, don't jump off the top rope with a closed fist like he did.
cool stuff for Trick Williams. Shout out to him. That was his moment. So now I mean, draft coming up next week. While we're talking about Dragunov, probably Carmelo moving up, maybe a guy that we saw in the show too, I wouldn't be shocked with for like a Tony D, you know, maybe even the family.
Yeah,
I could see the whole family coming up. That could be it. What's strange is you probably have Stax and Luca and Adriana that could use a little more work in NXT, but as a full package, I could absolutely see them being a fun main roster gimmick. Like, they could have fun segments on Raw. They could do fun backstage stuff, and you could have them in the tag team division. They could be someone that you know, you put on a Monday Night Raw or a SmackDown in the next couple of weeks with the draft.
Yeah. Here's what's interesting. The draft starts Friday. It starts this week.
You got the rules, right? Read us the rules.
It's Friday, Monday. So this is really, really interesting. So it starts this Friday. There's two nights of it. This Friday on SmackDown, there'll be four rounds on SmackDown, Gino, 16 total picks. Now on Monday, there will be six rounds with 24 total picks. SmackDown will have the first pick on this Friday. Raw will have the first pick on Monday. And the rosters will totally lock. It'll be signed, sealed, and delivered by Monday, May 6th. Now, here are the two interesting things, the rules for this year's draft. The women's tag team champions are eligible to be drafted. Champions on each brand are protected.
Well, okay, so that's different.
So that's right? Really different. So what are we saying here? Let's start with SmackDown. Who are our champions on SmackDown?
Cody.
He's going to be on SmackDown. And your WWE tag team champions on SmackDown, which is Theory and Waller.
Then
they're protected.
Bayley.
Bayley's
women's champ.
Protected. Women's
and
champ.
Logan Paul.
Logan Paul.
U.S.
They
champ.
They are protected. And looking at the graphic that they posted, that Friday's available draft pool, you will see all the superstars that are available for the draft, and it also says which includes NXT superstars, but there's a mixture of some Raw faces on here, and the same on Monday. There's some mixtures of some Raw and SmackDown, but I thought the champions being protected, the brand champions being protected, were very, very interesting, because I thought for sure we could see a Becky Lynch move over to SmackDown on Friday, but apparently not.
So you move. It's what I like about that is that at least there's just a rhyme and reason to it. Hey, we're keeping the champions. Sure. They're going to stay. And now we just know the people around them will move. So that's all you need to do. If you're not going to move the champions, you're going to move a bunch of the contenders back and forth. And so that's, you know, that's how you'll freshen things up there a little bit. And I'm expecting a lot of these guys and gals we're talking about right now from NXT to make their way up. I thought the women's championship match was really good, Chad. Yeah. I was very impressed. Yeah. And you know what? Coming out of this match, the person I was the most impressed with, Tatum Paxley. I thought this was this was her biggest spot, biggest match. And it's like, you know, one of those things where you don't get a bunch of opportunities like this. Some people do. There's the Roxanne's and, you know, Carmelo's, who are obviously blue chip prospects, right? Like the person that you draft first round that, you know, you're going to put them into play every single game. But then there's some others that they're good wrestlers. They're just kind of part of the group, and you give them chances and you don't know how it's going to go. But if you do and they swim, then wow. And I felt like this was a really big moment for Tatum in this match with Roxanne and Lyra, who have been two of the top women in NXT for a while. And they were the WrestleMania match. So the two top women in the division, she really held her own. Roxanne gets the sneak out win, as usually is the case in these triple threat matches. But I was very impressed with her. I thought she did a great job. And what this episode of NXT really made me notice was, like, between her and Lola and Parker, who we're going to talk about in a minute, you're really seeing that new wave of girls coming in to the women's division now. And it's kind of fun when you see them, and all of a sudden, like in a month or two, they're really developed and they're a lot better than they were just 6 weeks, 2 months ago.
Yeah, because they're dealing with some injuries again. Cora Jade, ACL. We saw that Nikita, bless her heart, she's
You sent me a great picture ACL. Of the two of them.
Yeah. Making ACL injuries great again. Just so fantastic. Parker is really, really, really
awesome. Impressive.
And Sol Roca is getting much better. That was a good brawl match. How confident do you have to be in two young superstars to put in a brawl match? Because sometimes those are harder to do than just a regular wrestling match.
Sol Roca was...
Because you've got... she looked really, really... I thought there was a good display last night of
that
women.
That whole
really
new group. I wasn't even comprehending how many women they had on the show. So think about all those matches we just mentioned, the triple threat match to start. You've got Sol Roca beating Davenport, where as positive as we are on everyone, I will say it does feel a little weird that Blair Davenport never has really gotten to the level on NXT that they probably thought she would. You know, they gave her the gimmick backstage attacker. That was a big deal, you know?
Yeah, and I think the same could say about poor old Fallon Henley. We thought she was, rising the ranks, and she hasn't lately been able to put anything together. But on the flip side, there's some young ladies that have been able to do it. Look, mm-hmm. I wasn't a fan of Lyra or the Tatum gimmick for a long time, and I've bought into it. And Tatum Paxley, what she's been able to do during all of her matches, during the time she's been on TV, a lot of people have done the crazy angle stuff in professional wrestling. It's hard to pull off because
she does it really well.
It's like we're just repeating it. She does a really, really good job where it's very believable. Okay, she is psychotic and she is sneaky. I didn't think Roxanne was going to lose this title, but it was a really good match, a good way for her to lose. Roxanne's another one we could see.
She said she's coming up on the main roster.
Yeah.
And she mentioned it too. She said, I'm going to come up soon. So be curious what happens, and maybe she'll lose that thing soon, or maybe she'll have it for a little while. But okay. So think about this. Those three women, you had Blair versus Sol, and Sol looked great. You had the
Jada Parker
beat Fallon, both really good, but Jada is obviously the one that they're very behind. You know, it's funny. It looks like that group now, it kind of reminds me of Judgment Day, where it's like Jada is the star, and now you got the group of guys kind of standing behind her, you know? You had the Natty and Lola Vice segment, which was really cool when Shayna came out.
I really like that. Yeah.
So think about that, though, just with those Lola, Parker, and Sol and Tatum. Those are four kind of completely new women who have not been around or towards the top of the division. Sol's been around a little longer, but she had the injury. So I'm just talking about experienced on the TV week in, week out. We haven't seen a bunch of them, and all four of them are really, really good. And all of them were on this episode. Then you had the segment with JC Jane. You had
with Thea Hale. Yep.
Thea Hale.
Jasmine. I mean, think about, and the new one, Jasmine, she's new.
Think about how many women they just had on this show. That is unbelievable.
And don't forget, and the contract signing for the NXT Underground with Shayna Baszler showing up,
which was awesome. And the crowd was really into it. And Shayna felt like a big star. And Lola's getting better and better. We had a fun match with the D'Angelo family, picking up a win. So curious, we talked about them to see what happens there. Jada Parker looks really, really good. She gets the win. Jasmine Nix and JC Jane, Lola Vice, Natty contract signing. JD McDonagh, he popped up in the back just to build up the match. Yeah. He had the big feud with Ilya Dragunov, and that one point where they were both in the hospital. I like what JD, it was funny, the interviewer said something like, JD, well, you know, what do you think? And he said, if you want to beat Dragunov, you're going to have to hospitalize him. And I don't think Trick is the man to do it. And she just looked over at him like, okay. And he walked off. It was funny. The Natty.
Let's talk some negative stuff here real quick. Yep. What do we think about Alexis King?
He
had a match with Baron Corbin.
And he gets the win, which was the biggest win of his career, I'd say.
100%.
He has not, to me...
Is it the gimmick?
Progress. You know, to be honest, he's not that great in ring. And he hasn't
improved. He never has been. Look, no. If you go back to MLW, and we're not just talking about now, he stayed hurt. He was just kind of the third Fabulous Freebird gimmick, always on crutches in MLW with MJF and the other guy, Richard, I can't remember what his name was.
And it's a bummer.
He always could cut a good promo, and he's got the look, but
he's got the go-away heat, too. Like, it's kind of like it's cringy, you know, but like he does have heat as a heel. It's just strange because I do think
there's stuff missing here. Yeah.
I think it was a good job for him to try to get away from the Pillman name, mainly because he's not like his dad. He's not in ring at all. And that's not like, I'm not trying to be mean by that. Not everyone is going to be. But when you hear Brian Pillman Jr., you can't help but think about what Brian Pillman was like. And that's what a lot of people have a problem when your dad or your mom or someone was very, very successful and you try to go down that same path because there's a lot of pressure to try to live up to that same, you know, hype. And Pillman was really good in ring. And so for him, I can understand why they go with the gimmick and the character because they know that he's just going to keep needing to get more and more reps in ring. You know, that he's still super young too. That's the thing,
sure,
right?
Sure.
But I agree with you. He has not progressed, continued to take the steps forward that we would have liked. Ridge Holland, they're rolling with this gimmick a little bit more, him and Sean Spears.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fine. Like, this is like one of those things for Ridge to kind of work it out. This is where you're supposed to do this here on NXT, like work your promos out, get your angles and out and figure it who your character is, and Sean Spears will be good for him. This is like the Bray Wyatt kind of did this, and so did Kane with John Cena trying to like tell him to release your inner demons and let it out. So we talked about Blair. What do you think about the Final Testament heading down there? Cross, the Authors of Pain, Scarlet, all.
Yeah.
If you think about it, they all had incredible success and their most success in NXT. The way that they were packaged down there, the way they were treated. And as I think we were talking about recently, WWE has said they want NXT to be a third brand. Even though if that is the case, it still does feel like they're a bigger fish in this pond than when they're up on Raw and SmackDown, right?
Well, I can tell you this, and you know this, what we thought would be, or not what we specifically, but a few people, some, thought that their Mania match wasn't really a Mania match and should be on a house show or TV. They did pretty well for what happened during WrestleMania weekends with two nights with all the big players showing back up, The Undertaker, Cody Story, you know, all the big matches. That six-man tag was pretty damn good Sunday night two. So they belong. The problem is, where do they belong? And if they are going to do back again, bringing this, you know, black and gold style brand back, which I think they are, again, you got to remember, we've got new TV contracts starting next year. Things are shifting all over the place. And I think you're going to see a lot of main roster stars be on NXT. I think it's the perfect place for them. As you said, they dominated. They had real good runs when they were here, up and comers. There's no reason for them not to go back down and have some really, really good matches and storylines, all of them. Now, it is a large group. You know, you've got Cross and AOP, then you have Scarlett and Paul Ellering. So, you know, it's a little convoluted. You get five total, but I think they could do a really good job in NXT with what they've got.
It was a really good show where, I mean, just a lot of things to talk about. They're going to do an NXT show at the UFC Apex building in Vegas.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, that'll just be like a different vibe. A cool look to it.
Now, we have the second part to spring breaking, right? It was night two this past Tuesday, or next week is going back to regular? I can't remember.
Night two is this coming up, yeah.
Okay.
Spring Break Week, Tia versus JC, Natty versus Lola Vice, Obafemi versus Ivar, Frazier and Axiom versus Authors of Pain.
Okay, so another good card next Tuesday. Okay, okay.
And we had the main event. Trick Williams gets the job done. Man, it was a good show. Really good show on NXT Spring Break. And AEW, as usually they do, a good pay-per-view from top to bottom. It's funny, you can't even say the pay-per-views are a little too long without people getting mad. Like, you can't even say they're good but long, and then people get upset with you. There were 12 matches on the card and 3 on the pre-show. And, of course, there will be one that people will talk about that's been the match of the year so far, I think, and will be one of the matches that people will probably always remember, because you were able to catch Bryan Danielson before he retired, which I think will be in the next year or so. And Will Ospreay has been one of the best in-ring wrestlers of the generation. So those guys go 32 minutes, really, really good in-ring, Coop. And as expected, they're just going to have a fantastic match. I think what's hard is that was the match that sold the card. And Swerve, we'll talk in a minute about Swerve. He wins, which is a great spot for him. But that was the one that kind of felt like the main event. And I think coming off of that match, the last two matches were good, but they weren't really able to probably get the same reception or kind of get to the level, obviously, of the match in front of them.
No, and that's, you know, the one thing that going into this pay-per-view, Dynasty, I think it was the match placement. Of this, would this be something that led this off? It definitely would not be before the main event. It's interesting they put it before the tag team championship ladder match. There was nothing wrong with it. 32 minutes, Ospreay with the win over Danielson. It's probably going to be remembered definitely by the AEW purist as the best wrestling match in AEW in their, 4-year stint now. Of all that, I have nothing wrong with the match. Zero. Wouldn't this gotten a more of a Cody / Rock reception if there would have been a storyline put into this? Or do you think this is what we were going to get regardless? I just didn't know if this needed a storyline or not, because we know that after the match, or before the match, Danielson was quoted in his own words that this was his last quote unquote full-time television wrestling match. He is no longer going to be on TV every week. He is going to do matches here and there. He's not retiring, but he is not going to wrestle every week. So this was going to be his last full-time match. So maybe it was something that it didn't need it to be. Because here we are, a week later, and I we'll get to the main event in a second, but you and I both said this pay-per-view was this match. It wasn't about Swerve and Samoa Joe, the AEW World Championship, at all. You and I think a lot of people could agree about that. I just didn't know if you would rather seen some sort of storyline or just, hey, look, Danielson, Ospreay are going at it for 30 minutes, watch the pay-per-view. Did you care that this didn't have a storyline in it, this match?
I always think it could use a storyline. Always. Okay. And I think it helps every time. You know, like the Lakers, there's like percentages of stuff. And it's just an overall basketball thing where it's like you can always go out and run like a pickup game, but that doesn't work as well. Even when you have a guy like LeBron and Anthony Davis, when you call plays for them, the offense always runs better. They always score more per possession. Why not put these guys in a spot to make people care even more, right? Make it maybe a little bit personal. This might have been one of those matches where I don't know how much the fans would have cared more, because this fan base really would have been hyped for this match no matter what. But for me personally, and maybe just to try to get this match to the next level as one that fans that aren't tuning in every week to AEW would want to get, I would have looked for maybe like a personal issue or something. But again, zero knocks on the in-ring stuff. So good.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Three pre-show matches, Trent Barretta beat Matt Sydal. You had Shibata and Cassidy defeat Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty. And Bullet Club Gold win the Trios World Championship match. So they,
you literally, I counted it up, Gino, I counted it up after the pay-per-view. You literally had more than 3 hours of in-ring wrestling at this pay-per-view.
Wow.
180 some plus minutes in-ring. This is not between, you know, we're waiting in promos and we're watching highlights, but we got, you know, with the three pre-show matches, we got 180 something minutes of in-ring wrestling. It's a lot. It's a lot.
And what, when you look through the card, the, I just feel like, you know, there's a two ways of thought. Obviously you buy a ticket or to go to see the show, or you pay for a pay-per-view now that's $50. You want to get your money's worth, but
sure.
I don't know if you need 21:55, 17:45, 17:20, 16:35, 15:10, 32:40, 21:35, and 18 minutes. I don't know if every single match needs to be 15 plus. Some, four or five of them, the ones towards the end do. And I like the shows that can kind of crescendo, or the shows that will start hot, kind of build to the middle, have kind of a segment or something to cool down, and then kind of build you back up. Sometimes there's just a lot, and it's a little bit too much in ring for every match that I don't know if they're important enough to need 20 minutes or 18 minutes for some that are just kind of thrown together matches. And that's well, sort
the,
of weird,
the opener, right? The opener, the pay-per-view opener, Okada and Pac, however you want to pronounce it.
It was almost 22 minutes. Yeah.
It was the second longest.
And I still, right now, I kind of wish they were doing a better job of just making Okada seem really strong and dominant.
Yeah. Yeah.
He feels like a very good wrestler in
which he is,
roster of really good wrestlers, you know? That, and that's like, he should have and should right now, I think, feel a little bit more dominant, you know? Pac is very good, but I need to know where Okada should be on the roster. And 20 minutes with Pac, I don't know. That seems much for me. We get House of Black beating Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe by pinfall. So I guess when you have the random trios being put together, but isn't it crazy that the guys that are put together, Copeland's just thrown together with them. Eddie Kingston, who won the title earlier in the year, or that big tournament, and now I hadn't Briscoe's even realized that Mark Briscoe's the Ring of Honor champion now. I didn't even know that. I mean, for this, you know, this was something that wasn't all that pushed or promoted on AEW Dynamite at all. So yeah, this one was, I mean, good match, and these guys go at it, and but it goes 17:45. You know, for just thrown together trios match. Yeah. And
where your single champions lose, which I don't mind Malakai Black getting a win. We talked about him last week.
And Brody King looks strong. And
sure. But man, of all the matches on the main card, I'm not talking pre-show, this one probably was the least talked about.
Mm-hmm. It was,
well, let's be honest. Let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Willow beat Julia Hart, which made sense because Willow gets the win now, and this will lead to Willow versus Mercedes Moné at Double or Nothing, I think, in a month. So she came out after. I will say, we didn't talk about it last week, I don't think. Her last promo that she cut was a little better than the ones before that were the moaning promos, which I thought I had to turn it down when my son came in the room. I was like, did I put on the wrong channel for a second? Like, I wasn't sure came on for a second. She is way better with a little bit of attitude.
I think we're getting a hill turn here, or at least a tweener. Willow's over and she's a face.
Yeah. Because Mercedes, she wasn't ever really that lay it on thick, corny version of Sasha Banks too much in WWE. I will tell you, Wade Keller, he just rips her with like the way that she's been presented, and like she's doing her dance and she thinks she's a model and she's looking at me. That's just not a baby face. She's looking at herself in the mirror all the time. It's pretty funny, but he's right. He is. It's not a baby face character. It's not, and she's just much better as a heel. Much better.
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of like Roman Reigns as a babyface.
Yeah.
Where you're just
yeah.
like watching it and you're like, ah, this is not fit. And you know she's good, and you know when it's the right, you feel it when it hits, but it's just not hitting here. And if she snaps on Willow and goes on Willow like she did on Bayley, you know, when they were in NXT, evil Sasha, and the girls, you know, when Izzy's crying in the corner and she's kicking her hand away and stuff, that's what we need right now, I think. But I get it. It is hard, though. When somebody comes in, they can't really come in and immediately be a heel because they're going to get cheered.
Sure.
So she I think we all kind of forgot that she's not very good in this role, in this character, like as a
and that's
role.
And that's a good point. It's been a flop. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. But I think they can right the ship right here.
Totally.
If you know what I mean.
Completely agree.
Okay. They can get her more heel like. Willow's over. I don't care if she wins this title or not. We know Willow's not going over her. I want to see somebody then get interfered with, some baby face, maybe Deonna Purrazzo,
mm-hmm.
maybe somebody get involved and keep her from winning this title. I don't think she needs this title. I don't. I just really don't. Because ultimately, you know, we want Tony versus Mercedes, right? I think that's the big match at Wembley.
And they could, I don't know if they will,
that's what I would work toward.
But if I were them, I would think about, I know their division's getting a little more, I would think about maybe putting the titles together and maybe you get a women's tag.
I agree.
Because
yeah, I agree.
I don't like how it feels like there's just women in completely different worlds of these two divisions.
Well, we've elevated, it seems like one for months, this TBS championship
completely
is
agree.
Stronger than the AEW women's world title.
Completely agree. And I don't like that.
That does never needs to happen. Never. No. And I'm not downgrading whoever's holding that belt, but it's like being the TV champion. It's not going to be better than the Intercontinental or the United States championship, right?
No.
Not even at that level.
So I
agree. I agree.
It's something's just a little bit off with that. Something.
Well, I think it was created for Jade, right? And it was to put her on TBS. We were going on two different shows, so I think they kind of got stuck in a spot. So yeah, I wouldn't mind if this thing got unified.
So one gentleman who's in a weird spot right now, reminding me of like Hulk Hogan at the end of his career when he's just putting himself over and getting booed, and like Chris Jericho, man, he is not,
oh, bro.
And why does this match need to go 17 minutes, 16 minutes and 30 seconds, honestly, with Hook, who doesn't go and – Hook is still young and green, and he's getting better, but he's super young, and he's not there yet. And here's what I hate about this. Did Jericho at any point ever even mention anything about the stupid FTW championship, which is like – so why does Jericho care about winning this? But if he was going to, come out and cut a promo about it. Yeah. Like, tell me in the weeks leading up, I'm going to take that from you or something. This was the low point on the show for a lot of people. Jericho is not over. He's getting booed. And
oh, it was ugly. There was CM Punk chants, retire, you're a petty. You know, it was not good. Now, there's been rumors for a while now about Hook testing waters. We know about his dad being there, but that's not uncommon anymore for someone, even a couple that's married, to go to another company and work, because we see that all the time now. Do you feel we've seen the last of Hook, or how could he recover from this if he does stay?
Hook is still young, but I don't think this program is going to do him any favors. And
okay.
There's still something with Hook. Like this isn't the gimmick that's going to get him to the top. Like he needs a tweak in some way.
No.
You know, with this, because this is still so young. But yeah, I mean, I see something there with him. I just, anything Jericho is involved with right now just kind of seems like go away heat. And this was really one of the low points on the show. Very good match between. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Hang on. Let me ask you one more question, and give me an honest answer. I'm not going to argue it either way. I just want to see if you're on the same thinking level as me at this. Do you think AEW is the right place for young talents to find their way. And
not right now. No, NXT is. Okay. Not at all. Because they don't have – they don't even do house shows. They don't have reps. They don't have a developmental center or place like NXT and the Performance Center. I mean, think about what happened with –
and I'm not saying like Hook, Ricky Starks, and those type of guy needs that. I'm just saying young characters – and I'm meaning young to a television audience.
But all of them,
you know, very many of them growing in AEW at all, though.
Hook absolutely could use that. And in what, you know, we heard with the way that the Punk surgery happened, where, and this isn't even as much of a knock on AEW as it is, look at the difference between any company that's like a WWE that has 40 plus years of foundation and all these different departments and all these different people. Like, I was just thinking about it last night, like how much money WWE makes from different things. Like, they probably make so much money in departments that most companies wouldn't even think of having, like a trading card or this random thing here or this app here or this thing that's like, oh yeah, WWE's got that going, or they're involved with that. And so that's the only different, that's one of the main differences between the two, is that when you are a wrestler, you probably do have a little bit more corporate blue tape stuff to go through. I think personally, you're way more taken care of. You're just in a way better position, though, with WWE, because they've dealt with everything with every wrestler. Think about what we've just saw with AEW right now with the Brawl Out and everything happening with CM Punk. That was the first time this company has dealt with something like that. Think about how many times Vince McMahon dealt with something like that. And I'm not giving Vince credit. Or think about how many times the WWE between Vince, Triple H, Bruce Pritchard, and those people backstage dealt with something like that. How many times do you think?
Well, just go back to the 80s with 100? Dr. D, David Schultz, John Stossel on 2020, right?
Like a billion times?
Just smoked a dude.
Undertaker, they had wrestler's court, you know? So they were used to this. Did they handle things right or wrong all the time? No. Right now, they're in a horrifying lawsuit that alleges people in the company knew of all these bad things Vince was doing. And so even with all those groups and all those HR, there was still stuff going on. But when you look at the way they're able to bring you into their system, gosh, it just reminds me, I can't help but like compare it to organizations, right? You think of like the really good organizations in like a basketball team, or you'll enjoy hearing this one. My buddy Eric, who does a lot of the stuff with us with basketball and football, we do all the previews and stuff. He was talking about Kyrie, and for example, that Kyrie is his faith that he has to fast certain times throughout the year for his religion. And when he was with Brooklyn, they didn't really do much to help him. And Mark Cuban hired a personal vegan chef to help Kyrie through some of those days where he can only eat certain times and certain things and certain amounts. So that person can like make it really easy for him. And it's just one, it's like a simple, small thing. But you notice like this year, Kyrie hasn't had any Kyrie off the court stuff.
Outburst,
you know?
And
he's been really good. They've been good. He's been good on court. He's been good off the court. And maybe that's it's true. Just like a small thing where he feels comfortable because he knows this place will kind of take care of him a little bit more. That's what's hard about the machine that is the WWE, man. They've got it.
Well, at the end of the day, you and I both know when you lay your head down on your pillow, the bottom line is money. You got to have money. But at the same time, WWE is not for every worker. And I know several stars that they don't care if they wrestle in front of 30,000 or 300, as long as they get paid. That's their attitude. Now, I think everybody at least once wants to be involved in a WrestleMania and WrestleMania week, because that is really special. But there's a lot of folks out there, Gino, that don't care if there's 2,500 or 12,500. They just don't. They just want to go out there and wrestle and make their money. So
strong match. which a lot of people were expecting to be. Roderick Strong beats Kyler O'Reilly. Really good wrestling match, but even this one, these guys go 17-20, so they get a ton of time. But a good match. You just kind of worry about a guy like Kyle O'Reilly who comes right back and then loses when he's getting built up. Like, where does he get placed on a really deep roster, you know?
And hey, didn't we get the return of Adam Cole after this match?
Baby, Adam Cole.
He stood up. Oh, my God, he could stand, Gino.
He can walk. Kevin Nash stands up from the chair. And he can walk. I've been seeing that meme and gif floating all over the place. Timeless Tony beats Mariah May. Or Timeless Tony with Mariah May beats Thunder Rosa. Mariah May, I've been really impressed by her lately. Good match between the women. Sure. Thunder felt like someone just to kind of give like a nice established former champ on the roster to give Tony a nice win. But it does feel like we want to kind of get to the inevitable Tony versus Mercedes match that I think the two will clash, right?
True. Yeah. I think that it was a good, dirty, down-home, like, scratch-your-eyes-out type match that Tony really needed, and it was really good to see them go at it. It was a good match. Nothing wrong with it. There's a lot of Deonna stuff there that could be figured out and figured in. And I'll say this. It's good to see Thunder Rosa back healthy and being able to work in the ring. That's where she's best. She's over-the-top personality. AEW, the women's division, is much better when she is healthy and she's able to compete inside the ring.
Young Bucks beat FTR, and he is back. Jack Perry. Scapegoat. Jack Perry. This is all going to be very interesting to me to see where they can go with this. Okay, so if he's the heel, who's the babyface? Or if he's a heel with the Bucks, or is he going to be cheered by the crowd and he's with the Bucks? I don't, like, that's why none of this makes sense. And you'll never be able to get to the match with CM Punk. Is he going to feud with Tony Khan for suspending him? I don't.
And what did Tony Khan say post that this is the reason why they showed the footage? Is it was because it's a storyline. It's a story they're telling, which, okay. People were so shocked to see him show up. I think you and I think we both called it.
We all said it. That's why they showed it. He just showed up at the New Japan thing right before.
Tony was there. Tony was there.
This is exactly what we were expecting to happen. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Can they
poor
make
FTR?
What worries me about this is if this was Adam Cole in this spot, I would think he could make something out of it. Because Adam Cole is really talented on the mic. Like, I feel like they could do something where they could get out of this. I don't know if Jack Perry has the chops to get, like, he's going to be over right now for a few weeks. He's going to get big pops. Okay, but are people going to care enough about his feuds and his matches and moving forward in a few weeks? Is he going to be able to go out there and cut really good promos? I don't know. And yeah. I don't think so. But shout out to Swerve.
I agree.
It was his moment. Swerve's house.
It was.
He gets the big moment. It did feel like it was like a month late, though, right? Doesn't it feel like it should have been?
There's no feeling. This was, and I'm glad you brought that up.
6 weeks late.
Kudos for him winning this title. I hated that it had to come on this pay-per-view, but there was a lot of eyes on it because of that match, right? Let's be honest. We're late on this, and in sense, what are we doing booking him in a title eliminator match on Wednesday night against a guy named Kyle Fletcher who is 0 for his last 6 on AEW television? This is not now.
In total kayfabe, why does Kyle Fletcher get a chance at that? Like, why? Why is it
right?
Why Kyle Fletcher and not Will Ospreay? Why is it Kyle Fletcher and not anybody who won a match? Okada, Roderick Strong, okay, they're champions of other, Jericho. Why is it not anyone else on this show who was involved in a win somewhere? That's just, to me, it's so strange that you have Kyle Fletcher. It's going to be, again, it will be a good match. It will be a good match. But why is it happening? As far as make it make sense to me for your TV show.
I felt like Cody should have been in a more position as a champion following up on his win after WrestleMania.
Swerve, you kind of want the celebration and let him come out and cut the promo.
Right, that's what I want, because we've been wanting him to win it for so long.
And then let somebody interrupt him and get right to his next feud or what that's going to be.
We've always hated the Eliminator title match. Now
we hated it. They never used to do it on AEW, and those fans would make fun of it.
WWE was doing it, and we WWE did on it.
Everybody, because we crapped on it, and everyone would say, this doesn't make any sense. You beat the champion, and then you got to beat them again? That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
Well, let's face the elephant. Let's get to the elephant in the room. How long is AEW going to be able to keep Ospreay out of the main event title picture with Swerve, with Wembley coming up later this summer?
No, they're not. He's winning it at Wembley. He has to.
Absolutely. Has to. I agree. And that's what sucks.
And that sucks. Yeah, you're going to get a little run for Swerve. But the problem is, you just turn Swerve babyface, and he's not going to be a babyface in that match against Will Ospreay.
No.
So even if you don't turn him heel, he's going to have to work heel in that match. So it's a little bit of a bummer. And not everyone will get to have a massive run all the time. So I'm sure he's happy that he's getting the title here. And it felt like a month ago, 6 weeks ago, he was the biggest part of the show. And then as Will Ospreay has built up his momentum, it has not felt like Joe and Swerve were the main part of the show. And Joe did a good job. They did fine. Nobody did bad. It just didn't feel like the main event. And now, like you said, we're right into a match.
Look, it's a good problem to have with Ospreay and Swerve, because that's definitely the match you want to point to.
Sometimes you don't have one baby face, right? Right now you have two baby faces for the company that are really good. I would have
liked to have seen Swerve have the celebration. I would have rather, and I think I said it 2 weeks ago, I wanted Cody to be the fighting champion immediately, saying, hey, look,
I told you the same thing right away.
Let me put this title on the line now, right? So I would have rather seen this reversed than what we're doing now. I just don't know why we have to have Swerve in action this early. I think it kind of diminishes his championship win a little bit. I don't want that feeling. Again, nothing's going to be wrong with the match, but it's like, why is this guy getting this match? You know,
let's quickly hit on a few things from SmackDown and Raw. So you mentioned the draft is going to start this week.
Sure.
On Friday.
Yeah.
Last week on Friday, we had AJ Styles with the old eye poke, with the old Ric Flair, rake to the eye. He gets the win. So it's going to be AJ versus Cody. Man, if I were a betting man, Chad, I've been known to make a small wager occasionally. My big bet would be LA Knight going to Monday Night Raw.
Sure.
I think he loses this because you put AJ in this match. He still didn't lose clean. You shoot LA Knight over to Raw. Man, wouldn't he fit perfectly in a match with a guy like a Damian Priest right now?
Oh, yeah.
If you wanted to big time. I think that's probably where you're going to go. We've continued on, man. Solo is raising his stock right now. And Tama Tonga, we continue to see him. And there's so many moving pieces with the bloodline and things that could happen with the bloodline. I'm just very excited for the future months with Jacob Fatu, with Tama Tonga, Jimmy and Jay, with Roman and The Rock, and all the places they could go there.
It's endless. Somebody says if these guys keep having kids, we're going to have the bloodline storyline for 4 or 5
months. Fatu has 300. He went from 300 to 1,000. Fatu has 1,000 kids right now, man. So.
Yeah, and then somebody posted 658.7. We'll never finish this thing.
We've got some new tag team titles for Waller and Theory.
Oh, man.
They look good,
man. I'm not
going to
lie. Those are better than the Raws. They just are.
Doesn't it just feel like from the look of everything, the storylines, the small things like the titles, they're allowed to be called pro wrestlers again. The way that the cards are now.
They can say wrestling.
Instead of having 12 matches on a pay-per-view, you can have five or six and really let them breathe, go a little bit longer, have these matches seem very important with big entrances and really fun video packages and builds up, like they feel like big experiences. It just feels different. These are all the little Triple H things too, you know, that you can,
yeah,
and their little attention to detail.
And just being able to, and we saw it as buildups with feuds over the last couple of months. We've been able to say, hell, we've seen someone from TNA. We saw Jordan Grace at Royal Rumble. So just to be able to acknowledge AJ had this long history with Impact and this wrestler had this long history there is so refreshing than just like wiping. You can't just wipe out history, you know? And WWE was good at that. You never knew where someone came from. Now we can have the word wrestling. We can say pro wrestling. We can say other organizations in a positive manner where this guy or gal came from. It's just really refreshing, man. Really is.
So coming up on SmackDown this Friday, Cody and AJ contract signing. The draft begins. So lots will be happening there. We got Bayley picking up the win by DQ there as Tiffany attacked both. So I'm sure this will lead us probably to a triple threat, you'd imagine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tiffy time, baby.
Tiffy is just a star. So this could be your triple threat match for the title at the pay-per-view coming up. Man, it's another good show. Really strong stuff. And the draft will start on Friday. A couple thoughts on Monday Night Raw before we get out of here, Koopa Loop. We had the vacant Women's World title awarded in the Battle Royal. And I thought they, again, have just done a really good job. It reminded me of what they did on Tuesday to build up to the trick match. All throughout the night, we're seeing, like when you watch the NBA games, the women arriving, you know, getting to the arena. Hey, this woman has a really big shot. Becky, here's a look at Nia. Here's a look at Liv. Here's a look at Chelsea and Piper showing up. Chelsea looked great there when she was arriving too. And it felt important. They put this match on as the main event last. And I was saying, you know, Becky is a real safe choice. And I, before Becky won, I was saying, anyone but Becky. Honestly, when they do things well, it doesn't bother me, you know, after. Because you understand, yep, Becky's the safe choice. They probably don't have that much of a plan right now because Rhea was going to be the plan for a while. You put it on Becky, it'll give you at least a few weeks. And maybe you have Liv beat her. Maybe you have someone like a Tiffany Stratton can beat a Becky Lynch. Or, you know, beating Becky is a big deal for someone to win the title. So I think this was actually not a bad way to do this because it means more for a Liv, I think, if she were to beat Becky for the title than to just win it in a battle royal like this.
Kudos to the presentation. Kudos to the booking. Kudos to all the ladies involved in this match. It was fantastic. For this thing to have 30 plus minutes on Monday Night Raw in the main event slot, number one, we would never ever see that during the Vince McMahon era. So just that alone was great. Some of the moves that some of these ladies were pulling off, as you mentioned, the Chelsea Green getting eliminated, but the refs were tending to someone else and she popped back in. And I thought, she's winning this thing, Gino. She's really going to win this thing. Right. It was just really, really good. Really, very good the way it was played out and worked out. I thought Liv was too obvious for her to win because she had quote unquote injured. I know, you know, when we got down to the final three or four, I thought it was a given that Rhea was going to win this. And then I get a message that, oh no, Becky Lynch is winning this thing, isn't she? And I looked at Gino and poor Gino, but after you saw it and after now,
yeah, didn't mind it at all. Yep.
No, and they can't. And look, and no one said Becky's going to keep this for three or four more WrestleManias, right? Becky lost how many matches to Nia over the last couple? Becky has been losing matches. She can be pinned. She's not the inevitable. We have Charlotte Flair close to coming back. There's a lot of good things in this division. And
talked about some of the women they could be pulling up, right?
Look,
you know?
Yeah. And look, I think Liv needs to snap. I'm going to use Gino's words. What would happen in real life when you've hurt the champion, you've got your shot now to win this title in a battle royal, and you're about to win it, and it just got taken away from you? You have to snap. She has to snap. And we know her chase was 10 times better than her title run. Make her snap, and then let's see her win the championship.
Couple things I didn't think were fantastic on Monday Night Raw. So opening segment, we have Jey Uso and Damian Priest out in the ring. Jey Uso comes out. These two will be fighting for the championship at the pay-per-view. Jey was fine, and I do like that they found something as an individual storyline between Priest and Jey Uso. That these guys, a few years ago, in the back, they had a match. Priest said that he kicked the crap out of him. They went out and had drinks afterwards. Jey said, "I took an Uber." You know, it's just like, oh, okay, yeah.
that was good.
And I liked, I thought the content was good. I just thought Priest's delivery wasn't very good. You know, he didn't have the presence of a world champion cutting an opening good promo. Call. You know, and so I enjoy the fact that it was more than just, hey, you won the number one contenders match, I'm going to beat you up. That they are trying to find an actual story for these two guys so it can feel like something. And, you know, I will give him at least a couple mulligans, because how many times has Priest done that? Never, or one or two, where he's been in the ring by himself, not standing next to Rhea and Finn and Dominic and the whole rest of the group, where they're passing the microphone around and he's only having to say a few things, but he still has his group right next to him, shoulder to shoulder. You're feeling a little bit more confident there. You're there by yourself in the ring for really one of the first times in a while.
Now.
You know?
Yeah. And Dom's hurt. Things are different now for Damian. And we were both very, very high on him. And we said, this guy is going to be a world champion. And he is. Since WrestleMania, it's not been really all that good for him. And I'll say this, and I said this during the Mania preview, it would not shock me if Jey Uso won this championship.
Jey got it back, right?
Look,
I know what?
Yeah, look, I got more respect from him by him embracing than him and his brother. He was very let down after that match. That he read the comments and he took it personal. He said, hey, look, I can tell you that our time got short. I could blame this. I could blame that. But I let everyone and myself down. I'm not going to do that ever again. You know how hard it is for anyone in this day, Gino, to admit failure, especially
medicine,
on
right?
that level?
I know.
On
to
that
say,
level?
You know what?
And we know this dude could work. We know this dude could work.
We've seen
it
in
shock
the main event matches.
If he beat... Look, would it shock you if he beat Damian Priest for this championship?
They've done it with so many Money in the Bank winners where you win and you only have a short reign. And
right.
This is a little bit of a test time for Priest. Like, if he goes out there the next 2 weeks and doesn't cut great promos again,
it's not going
to
be good.
And they might say, hey, we got to get to Jey real quick. We could put it on Jey, give him a moment. And then the draft is coming.
You got Bloodline.
Switch it up.
You got Bloodline stuff on both shows.
You could do a lot of stuff with Jey with the Bloodline. Hell, you could do that and have Roman show back up on the other show, right? On Raw.
Well, dude, it's going to be very interesting this draw, this draft on Friday and Monday to see where it goes. Our show next week, we're going to dissect some of this stuff, and this is going to tell you some future booking, because I'm telling you, some titles could change hands with certain guys and girls going to different shows, and this could be one of them, because I was very disappointed in Damian Priest. I know you didn't have a lot of time out there, but you've got to make better time. Dude, you're the world champion of Monday Night Raw. Regardless what that title is, you are the man. Act like it. Be it. There just seems like there's not a – his shoulders are a little slumped with it.
I agree,
you know?
Right?
Again,
he didn't – yeah,
it just feels like he's a little slumpy with it.
He didn't just have the aura that you would have liked. And maybe that's just going to come with finding his footing, finding his voice a little bit more on his own.
That could be.
We'll give him a few weeks
hey,
more.
It's a big task. Hey, that's a big task to put that title on your shoulder on Monday Night Raw, right?
It is. That's a lot of pressure on you now. And the tag team match for the tag team titles, it was a fine match. R-Truth and The Miz versus DIY. I thought this felt like
a
it would have been... a good moment
yeah.
to just kind of shift the perception of the tag team division with Triple H now in charge, where you could have put it on Gargano and Ciampa, let those dudes have some really good matches with the Creed brothers and guys like that. Instead, they have Miz and R-Truth win, which was a little bit surprising to me because I don't think Miz and Truth need a big run. And two, I don't think this was great for Gargano and Ciampa because I'm not sure exactly if you want them losing over and over again. They kind of felt like they were starting to at least get a little momentum with the crowd. They were doing the Regeneration X thing. So, yeah, this was something that I didn't think was necessarily the right call, or maybe they've got some other plans soon with the draft coming up, but I would have done the opposite here.
Yeah. And it's interesting that the week before, the crowd really, the post-Mania, right, Raw, the crowd really wasn't super, super into Miz and R-Truth the Monday after Mania. But this past Monday, they were completely sold on those two. And the only direction I can think of now for Tommaso and Gargano is somebody turning on someone, because I just don't see how you come back from that loss as a tag team. Maybe they get shifted to another brand. Maybe they're back down in NXT. I don't know. But I thought for sure, if I'm going to bet, this is the match that I'm building a parlay on. I would think that DIY would win, and they didn't. Hey, the match was solid. The crowd was hot into it. Interesting booking here, to say the least.
Man, Chad Gable, he is
best part of Raw.
Oh my God.
This is great.
He tears apart Tozawa, Maxine, and Otis, just ripping them. They're standing right there in the ring, and he just head to toe, top to bottom, just tears them apart, man. Full on heel Gable. This was great.
Dude, and Tozawa tweeted, or was on X after Raw, and he posted, "I am good for nothing. Sorry." this is so good, man. And Gable is just like, man, this is what we wanted. When you snap, we want you to snap. And this is it. This is a big moment for Chad Gable in the WWE. It just really is. You talk about the pinnacles for professional wrestlers in their respected organization. This is it for him.
His high point.
We thought he was good with shush, please. This is about to be amazing.
Chad Gable, and with the draft coming up and new faces on both sides, he's someone who you could see just being elevated now with this role and not as much of the funny gimmicky stuff. We had Gunther who came out and he said, you know, I'm not going to make any excuses. Sami Zayn, you're not a target anymore. I'm going to win the King of the Ring. And dude, this guy, what I really thought was cool about the Monday Night Raw episode, we had him, we had Xavier Woods comes out after and he interrupts because he was the former King of the Ring. And so we get Xavier and Kofi in a match with Imperium, which leads to, after the match, Kaiser beating the crap out of Vinci in a really evil sense. So we had like a nice 30 minutes here of Gable going nuts and then Kaiser going nuts not long after this.
This is great.
And then we had Drew talk about how he wants to be the King of the Ring. It looks like Drew and Sheamus are going to be involved in some way, shape, or form. Sheamus keeps having fun with the fact that he wasn't completely in shape when they called him back. And all the crowd everybody was talking about how he's too fat now. And so he'll say burger after burger after burger after burger after burger. So Sheamus said that he was expecting to come back in like a month and they called him early. So he was physically ready, but the part that you're not in shape is like your cardio, right? The belly, that's the part that's the last that comes off when you have an injury, because you can start doing the rehab, the lifting, the working out, the squats, whatever you have to do, but you can't really run. You know, that's like one of the last things you can do. So poor Sheamus has a little bit of a panza belly and he's been getting made fun of. He's been getting made fun of and he's laughing with that. But man, so if you got Sheamus and Drew and Gunther right off the bat in that King of the Ring, that just makes it feel really like elevated, right? We're very important. Oh, yeah. And
I don't know who I want to win it, but I don't care at this point because one of those will, and they'll be damn good at it. I've always liked the King of the Ring gimmick, especially when it's done well. I even loved it when Baron Corbin won it. It just elevated him, man. You remember him with the robe and the crown and
it was they brought it back initially because it was their way of saying sorry to Bret Hart. Because in 93, they took the title off Bret Hart. Remember at WrestleMania, Hogan ends up with the title. And so they create the King of the Ring. That's actually where Hogan loses the title to Yokozuna, 93 King of the Ring. And that was like the last Hulk Hogan match that we saw for years on TV. He would do some of like a European tour a little bit later, but that was it. He loses to Yoko there because the plan all along was supposed to be Hogan wins. Then at SummerSlam, Bret beats Hogan. And that was supposed to be like the passing of the torch that Hogan was going to put over Bret, and then he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't put Bret over. He said, Bret, no, brother, I'm not putting Bret over. He's a small guy. I can't do that. I'll put over Yoko. Yoko's a big man, you know.
Yoko is the god.
You know, and then they did the weird gimmick with the camera and the bolt that shot out of the camera and Hogan's eye and like, so all that weird stuff. But King of the Ring came back initially in 93, and that 93 event is awesome. That's the one that Bret wins. He beats Razor. Yeah. Beats Perfect, and then he beats Bam Bam in those three matches there in a row.
Oh, I love, so good.
I love the King of the Ring gimmick, man. Love it. And with the talent they have here, it sounds like it's going to be a really, really good one. Just a strong, strong episode. Any other things to mention that we had? Andrade and Ricochet in a tag team match. They pick up a win, which is great. I mean, just like Ricochet feels right now where he should be on the card at the very least. Like, if you don't have a bigger plans for him, at least let me see this guy every week in a match. That's what I want. Give me a give me him on the card every week. And I think, in a weird way, I think he's getting a little bit elevated because Samantha Irwin's so over right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Crowd and fans are even a little more into him because they're so into her, and it's like, oh, they're together, that's so cool, Ricochet, and like her watching him, and she'll be making faces during the match when he's getting beat up. Like, she's so good over there, just so awesome. Freaking so good. So next
and week, it's real, you can feel the realness. It's not anything that's like fake between those
no
two. So good.
She's so genuine, really, really good. Next week on Raw, draft continues. U.S. champ Logan Paul is on Raw. Jey Uso, Ricochet, and Andrade versus Priest, Balor, and McDonough. Oh, that'll be fun.
That'll be fun.
A six-man with those three. And we finished off Raw with the Women's World title and that Battle Royal. Coop Loop, it was a really good week. I mean, just think about what we're talking about. Yeah. NXT had a great show. SmackDown keeps rolling on. Raw was very, very good. We've got the drafts coming up. AEW had a good pay-per-view. It was a good sort of timing for them because they were able to get some of the focus off of that CM Punk crap and onto Ospreay, Bryan Danielson, and what a good match that was. But then the problem was right after that match, you got Jack Perry coming out again. And so you wonder if that's going to continue where he goes. But overall, really fun week, top to bottom. Thanks for joining me a little bit early this week, Koopaloop. We'll be following you on Twitter and on Instagram at the Chad Cooper. And next week we'll be previewing the WWE show in France because that's on the morning. That's going to be a fun day for me of the Derby, Kentucky Derby day.
That's
early morning from France. So that show will go, I think it's like 1:00 Eastern time on Saturday morning.
That'll be fun. France. That'll be a good one.
So we'll be watching some races, playing some Derby, and watching the big show coming up from France, not Paul White, the premium live event coming up for WWE. Love you, brother. Thanks so much for helping out again this week at the Chad Cooper. And we'll talk to all of you again next week right here on That's What G Said.
And that's going to do it for this episode of That's What G Said podcast. So big thank you to Eric for giving us previewed with the NFL draft. Big thank you to Chad for helping us out with this week in wrestling. Now, if you're following along with the NBA playoffs, we're doing daily NBA shows, previewing the games, quick hit
with our best bets. You make sure to follow on Twitter. It's me, Gino B. I'm also posting them to the YouTube channel. So give a follow there if you're a basketball fan. For next week, for Derby and Oaks, I will have big preview shows. We'll have guests joining us to preview each of the undercard races. So we're hoping to get between 10 and 15 guests overall. And then each of them can share some thoughts on the Derby. We'll have a big preview of the Derby and the Oaks field themselves. So expect a bunch of stuff next week. And we'll get back right into the groove and hopefully have a really big Oaks and Kentucky Derby weekend. Hope everyone has a nice rest of your week, and we'll be ready to rock and roll for a very big week in the world of racing. It looks like they're going to draw all those entries on Saturday night for Derby, Oaks, and for those 2 days. So we should have plenty of time, just about a week, to really look at all the big races, and hopefully we can get some of the videos and the shows out early in the week so everyone can have plenty of time to listen and get your handicapping done. Good luck, and we'll talk to you real soon next week leading into the Kentucky Derby.